to the Hammer.
What's up, guys? This is Smooth Ben Henderson, and you're listening to the Hammer.
This is Dimitri Johnson, and you're listening to the Hammer.
This is Chris Weidman, and you're listening to the 93.3 The Hammer.
This is Matt Hughes, and you're listening to the Hammer.
I'm Michael DeCamp Bisping, and you're listening to Hammer MMA.
Roy McDonald.
This is TJ Dillashaw.
Now Mark the Hammer Coleman, and you're listening to the Hammer.
Welcome to the Hammer. I'm your host, Dave, and as always, by my co-hosts,
Steve Jeffrey, hey,
and Liam Dunlop.
You're listening to us at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. We've got a great show for you. It is gushing snow. We got to watch the Super Bowl. There was some fights. GFL's making moves. Like, really, everything's coming up Millhouse. So I think we're going to start with the upcoming fight night, which is going to be on the 22nd of February. That will be Henry Cejudo taking on Song Yadong. Then we will also be talking in the second half of the show about the fight night we just watched and what's going on in the world of GFL.
Those big GFL moves. Yeah, there's not a lot, but we can talk about the few matches that seem to be on the table for the new GFL promotion. Yeah, Dave's right. We're in the middle of a UFC card every week going into like the summer, I think, at this point. So no shortage of cards to talk about. Not all of them great. This one coming up, this February 22nd one, UFC's going back to Seattle. And I couldn't remember. I was like, have they been to Seattle for a long time? I know they went for a Demetrius Johnson title defense like a long time ago, but they must have gone back since then. No, the last time in Seattle, Johnson versus Moraga, July 2013.
Well, really, like, is Seattle that big of a market?
they get stuff, right? And so that's been quite a while. And the card was actually pretty stacked for a fight night, especially with some really rough fight nights also going on.
It all fell apart.
Just, of course, as always, just all falling apart. I mean, we could talk about the fights that fell off soon, but, you know, we'll talk about the fights that are still here. I believe the main event was always, and it's still sticking around, 6 days out. A bantamweight fight between Henry Cejudo and Song Yadong. Henry Cejudo, obviously former bantamweight champion, two-division champion. Song Yadong, a guy who's always been on the way up, but, you know, has never, you know, got a title shot or anything. But they've now hit the point where they found themselves ranked beside each other. Cejudo's dropped down to 7 after a couple of tough losses coming out of retirement. Song Yadong sticking in there, beating tough guys, but never getting the name that's gotten him, I don't think, much above the number 8 rank that he is right now. So the winner doesn't really get too much traction, but a loss, especially for Cejudo, would be brutal for one of these guys right now.
Well, Cejudo's a very, very strong 7. And let's talk about him for a bit. So he's an Olympic champion. He came in, he did most of his work in flyweight, great record. Had 2 losses against Demetrius Johnson and Benavidez, but then he avenged the loss against Demetrius Johnson. Then, after kind of pushing out the guys who came down to face him, like TJ Dillashaw, he went up, he conquered bantamweight, and then kind of at the height of it, he just was like, I'm not really feeling it, and retired for like 3 or 4 years. And since he's come back, he's lost 2 straight. So he took a 3-year retirement at the height and came back and lost to Aljamain Sterling and Mirab Dvishvili. But there's really no shame in that, in my opinion, because Aljo was the champion and Mirab is now the champion. And he's got good wins over, like, TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz, like, good guys.
That's exactly right. There's no shame in those losses. The problem is, with the retirement, his last win is, what, 5 years ago now? So, like,
five years ago, and he's 38 years old, and he's had injuries, and, like, it's looking like he should be done.
It's looking like he shouldn't have retired in the first place.
Yeah, he should have stayed in. And he should be retiring now, and he shouldn't have been retiring 4 years ago. Meanwhile, Song Yadong, you know, he's taller, he's rangy, he's got good stuff going on. He's got a good record in the UFC because he's actually been in the company for a long time. But let's be honest, even though, like, he's got something like 13, 14 UFC wins, anytime he moves up to that next level, you know, like, beats Marlon Moraes, loses to Corey Sandhagen. Beats Ricky Simon, Curtis Gutierrez, loses to Peter Yan. So, I mean, like, he can beat all those guys in that, like, 8 to 15 range, but anytime he stepped up to take on a guy in the top 6-ish, he's lost.
And he can't get above this level.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough against the Henry Cejudo, which has obviously
the preeminent wrestling game. Song Yadong obviously has terrific stand-up, but not great ground skills. His ground game is not as strong as, obviously, as Henry Cejudo. Is it going to be a stand-up fight? Is it going to be a ground fight? That's where it goes for me. I think if Cejudo can get him down early in the fight, I think Cejudo can dominate this fight. But if it stays standing, I'm kind of scared for Cejudo. Cejudo doesn't get finished often. He's only got finished once in his career. But Song Yadong knows how to keep guys at range. As Dave said, Song Yadong has a good reach advantage over a smaller guy like Henry Cejudo.
To me, this fight, if I'm judging this fight, it is all about Henry Cejudo. It really isn't about Song Yadong at all. Because the question is, can Cejudo still get takedowns at this level? If he can't get takedowns again on Song Yadong, who's way bigger than him, he's going to get pieced up and he's going to lose. If he can get takedowns at 38 years old against a bigger guy, he's going to win. So it's just a question of, do you think Henry Cejudo shot or not? And I'm going to be honest, I don't think he shot. I think the three-year break is bad. I think the two losses coming back are bad. But I still think he's got more than enough to take down Song Yadong when he needs to. I think he wins this one.
Yeah, it's tough. And it's also something where you go back a few years pre-retirement. I don't even know if Cejudo has that, I don't even know if he's at a complete disadvantage on the feet. You know, obviously he's got less range than that, but he had power. He had some of his best wins were his striking during his hot period there. But yeah, now giving up the reach all this time, the age, it's like, oh, okay, now Song Yadong's with his reach and power, he's probably not a guy that Henry Cejudo wants to mess around with standing too much. There's too much risk there. He's got to go for the takedowns. I don't think he's got the takedowns like he used to have. I just don't think he does. He had some great takedowns before. Overall, his takedowns haven't been great since he got back. Song Yadong has pretty good takedown defense. I don't know how many of them he gets. I think
who has great takedowns against Aljo Sterling, or who has great takedowns against Merab Dvalishvili?
And that's true. Maybe he's got to go for that. But also, who has great takedowns pushing 40?
Fair question.
That is a really good point. You know, he's probably not the guys to see, but also, yeah, like the size, the age, I have this feeling that Song Yadong is going to hurt him. And Cejudo should try. He should try to do the wrestling. He should try to do the wrestling. He should try to ground Song Yadong because that's definitely his weak spot. There's a path to victory for sure for Henry Cejudo here. But I don't know. At this point, when he left, he was arguably one of the best fighters in the world. He doesn't feel like one of the best fighters in the world right now. This would be Song Yadong's best win, I think. I would probably say. I kind of think this at the time. And I think it's the style matchup at the time and place. I'm going to go Song Yadong here.
There's an 11-year age gap. How is Song Yadong only 27? He's been fighting professionally since he was 15. He fought against Haile Alatang when he was 15 years old and he beat him. Like, obviously he's not that great, but still he's a UFC style guy.
He made his UFC debut in 2017. So he's been fighting in the company for 8 years. Yeah. And he's 27 years old.
And Song Yadong's never looked bad. I want to say one thing. Song Yadong's never looked bad. He's just got outmatched sometimes. He's a really good fighter. It's just he's never, I don't know. I'm still going for it. You guys are Cejudo on this? I know you are, Dave.
Liam? It's a tough one for me because you guys both make good points. Song Yadong, 11-year age difference for me is big. Henry Cejudo, obviously, if he can get the takedowns, but yes, 38 years old, hasn't been able to get the takedowns in 5 years, literally. Song Yadong keeps the reach and keeps it going. I think Song Yadong wins this one by a decision.
I still believe.
I think that's a perfectly valid. I mean, if you can get the wrestling, that's a perfectly valid choice. I was expecting Cejudo to be the favorite. Song Yadong is almost a 3-1 favorite. People think he's done, and I think you've got it too, Dave. I think the fact that he hasn't been able to do his thing since he came back, but that could also be a competition and a style thing too.
He fought the two best wrestlers in the division, and he couldn't do it. Yep. Now people are like, "Well, he's done," but like Song Yadong is not Merab Dvalishvili.
Good main event. The co-main event is good. I mean, I'm not going to say this is a dream match. I mean, these guys aren't names, but for a stylistically in the middleweight division, a division that often has like fights that are like, oh, like I'm not looking forward to this. Grappler Brandon Allen versus grappler Anthony Hernandez. These guys are aggressive wrestlers, great submission abilities. I am thrilled to watch this fight, even though it's not like, how meaningful is this for the rankings at the moment? Brendan Allen's what, like these guys are what, like number 8, number 12 or something like that. Like it's not even that It's not even that consequential.
But it's like 10-ish or so in like middleweight. Like there's some stakes if you're going into this. It's not nothing.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And especially because Brendan Allen got pretty close to the title picture there. Just he ran into Imavov like everybody else is running into Imavov right now. Oh, Brendan Allen's number 9 as of this moment, and Hernandez is 12.
Yeah, it was a tough last fight for Brendan Allen. He had to go into France and fight against Imavov. That's not easy. He was on a great run before then. He subbed out Paul Craig, which is not easy to do. Anthony Hernandez is on a low-key, very good run, too. He's beaten Barrio, Shabazian, Kopolov, and
he's got like 6-7 straight wins.
Yeah.
And the thing The thing I really like about Brendan Allen is the finishes. Is like he's got that submission game because he's tapped out Kopolov, he's tapped off Barrio, but he's actually shown he can throw on the feet, too, because he's, you know, he fought it out with Pereira and ended up, you know, knocking him out, and fought it out with Edmund Shabazian too. So, like, both those fights went deep. So he's showing me cardio. He's showing me he can be well-rounded.
These guys are awesome. These are awesome fighters.
I've been a big Brendan Allen fan since we saw him back in Norfolk, Virginia in 2020. And he's had 3 losses since. But Sean Strickland on his way up, Chris Curtis, and Imavov. And the Chris Curtis one was a tough one. He got folded. But Anthony Hernandez, yeah, he's on a run right now. He has a couple losses, but his last loss was 2020. So these guys don't lose that often. This is going to be a war. And I think if it's going to be a war, I like Brendan Allen. I think Brendan Allen has both the knockouts and the submission game. Obviously, so does Anthony Hernandez. But I like Brendan Allen. I've always liked Brendan Allen, and I'll call him every time.
I kind of see where you're coming from. I do like Brendan Allen. I respect him. This fight to me is pretty consequential because, like I said last week, middleweight right now is poised to go a lot faster because you've got a lot of older guys in the top positions. Strickland, Whitaker, Adesanya, Jared Cannonier, who we'll be talking about soon. As these guys start dropping out of the rankings, guys like Brendan Allen and Anthony Hernandez are going to shoot up.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, like, even though it's only 9 and 10 or 9 and 12, these guys should be ranked higher. Really, they should. That said, I really like Hernandez. I don't know, man. Like, I get Brendan Allen. I get the hype. I think he is one of the best. But I really respect the way that Anthony Hernandez has put a streak together. I really respect he's shown me a lot of different angles that he's got. I don't think Brendan Allen can tap him out as easily as he's been tapping guys out. And I also think that Brendan Allen, you know, his striking game isn't that great. He really does want to take this fight to the ground. And I think maybe Hernandez has got the striking option to maybe win a decision here.
I don't know if he does. That's where my question is here, because I think Hernandez is the better wrestler in this fight. I think pure wrestling, Hernandez is the better wrestler, and that's probably going to do good here. Striking, I don't know what to do with it, because that's been Allen's weak spot, but he's also seen more game in the striking. But Hernandez is, I don't know what happens on the feet in this fight. I feel like Hernandez is the better wrestler, but Allen's probably like just like the more gritty guy, like for like in a firefight. But I don't know. I don't even know, Dave.
Yeah,
this,
but Imavov outgritted him for like 15 minutes.
Well, Imavov is one of the best strikers in the division.
And I think like I don't think he can out wrestle Hernandez. And I think Hernandez has got enough chops on the feet that like
it might be enough. You're totally right. Do I go Hernandez too? I feel like I don't know. I like both these guys. I think Hernandez's wrestling is better. I think they're equally dangerous on the ground, and I don't know what to do standing either. A 3-round fight, I'm thinking Hernandez wins a decision, and it's mostly based on wrestling, not based on either of these guys finishing the other guy.
Razor close odds, right?
It has to be, right? Not even close. Dave, Hernandez, 3-1 favorite.
I mean, I'm calling him, but 3-1 is
wild. This feels tighter to me. Okay. I love that fight. I like both these fights. Top 2 fights, good stuff. Third fight down, I don't know what it's going to be. I think it's probably going to be, because originally it was supposed to be Dominic Cruz in his retirement fight against Rob Font, which totally would have been second or third from the top.
Wikipedia right now has it as Gene Silva and Melsik Bagzarian, but that doesn't make sense to me because, I mean, like, Rob Font's got another guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm thinking it's going to be Font versus Jean Matsumoto. So, like, let's go with that as the third from the top. I don't know how he's going to do against, it's hard to say with Rob Font, how he's going to do against Dominic Cruz in Dominic Cruz's last fight. Matsumoto, when you're getting a replacement guy, an unranked replacement guy, Matsumoto's 2-0 in the UFC. He beat Brad Katona. Rafa's not at his peak right now. It's actually not a bad replacement fight.
Matsumoto's like 16-0. He's a monster.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, like, I kind of think, like, Font versus Dominic Cruz, you know, it was a good match. I was actually going to call Font, but I don't know that if I love calling Font into Matsumoto, who's 16-0, younger, and has UFC experience, and has been, you know, he was supposed to be on pay-per-view. He was supposed to be on 313 and kind of was like, put his hand up and was like, yeah, I'll take Font in Seattle. So, with Matsumoto being very good and being on the hunt here, I might call Matsumoto on this one.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me to call on this because we never see Rob Font get finished, and Matsumoto coming in has been more of a decision fighter. So if he knows how to grind one out, he can win this one. But against Rob Font, it's also not easy. He loses to the best of the best. Matsumoto's not there yet. I got to call Rob Font. I like his win against Kyler Phillips recently. But, yeah, it's a tough one for me to call because we haven't seen too much of Matsumoto. His record is unbelievable. But, yeah, I still have to call Rob Font. It's tough.
You know, he beat Katona. He decisioned him.
I don't think beating Katona is that special anymore, though, unfortunately.
He's out of the UFC now.
It's God, Rob Font's so tough because his record isn't that great. But you're right. Look at the guys. We say this every time. He loses so many fights, but Figueiredo, Sandhagen, Marla Vera, Jose Aldo, everybody loses to these guys.
He's also really big for the division, like good reach, good height.
He's huge. He can wrestle. He can strike. He can't be finished, apparently. And you look at the other guys, like the guys he's turned away, like pretty recently. Adrian Yanez had a lot of hype. Kyler Phillips has a lot of hype. He turned those guys away as an underdog, I believe. Font's pretty good at this. If you're not an elite level guy, he does everything well enough that it's really hard to win rounds against him. I don't know. I'm going to go Rob Font. I picked Rob Font against Phillips, I think, too, just because it was like, what's Phillips going to do to him? Rob Font never sniffs the top five again, but I think he wins this fight. Oddsmakers don't agree. He was the favorite against Dominic Cruz. He was a 2-1 favorite. He is Matsumoto's about a -175 favorite. So at the moment, Matsumoto's the favorite, but Rob Font, he's a spoiler on these up and coming guys. I was actually wondering if they were going to switch these fights around. There's a featherweight fight, John Silva versus Melsik Bagzarian, and I mean that was a good fight anyway. But when Rob Font needed an opponent, and I was like, oh well, you know, maybe it won't be at 135. I was like, could you do Rob Font versus John Silva? But hey, the way this all played out, still pretty good. Silva's 3-0. He took like a super short notice fight against Drew Dober up at lightweight and beat him, which is pretty impressive stuff. And so now he's now 3-0. Melsik, he's 3-1 in the UFC right now. No huge names under him, but he's a decent opponent. I thought maybe John Silva would get something a little higher, but it seems like a pretty, like still pretty fun fight.
Is it a feed?
I don't know if it's a feed, but I mean, spoiler. I'm taking John Silva. You know?
Yeah, I'm taking John Silva every day.
I mean, like, Bagzarian, like, his best win is Tucker Lutz and, like, maybe Bruno Souza. And I mean, like, they're UFC wins. I get it. But I mean, like, John Silva's beat guys I like Charles Jourdain and Drew Dober. So I'm going Silva here.
Yeah, even the Reston Wilson win, like, he destroyed him. And yeah, John Silva all day. Come on.
He's a 6-1 favorite. And then in light heavyweight, Ion Cutelaba, not always good for a win, but always good for, you know, some action, versus Ibo Eslin, who too many UFC fights. I think he has, what, like a couple UFC fights at the moment? Yeah, two UFC fights, both finishes. They booked this one because it'll probably be exciting. And Cutelaba is one of those guys that if you beat him, then they probably give you a ranked guy.
Kudalaba's keeping that gate, but do you like Aslan here, Liam?
I do. I like Ibo Aslan a lot. Like, they put him up against Anton Turkoglu because they fought in, like, the Brave CF circuit in 2020, and that went to an amazing fight of the night. He destroyed Rafael Cerquera, which he was not supposed to do, and this Aslan guy is a dangerous man, and Kudalaba doesn't have it anymore. He's pretty chinny.
Kudalov's wins recently haven't been that hot. Like, he's, what, won 3 of his last 10 fights?
And he didn't even win that Urslan fight. I know,
right? Barely wins his split decision against pretty much, unfortunately, a nobody. And, like, Devin Clark, who's, like, a pretty beatable guy, loss after loss after loss. Like, and again, against pretty good, often dangerous guys. But Kudalov, he's a tough guy to count on right now. I can't imagine that Aslan's not a big favorite of this
one.
He
got subbed out by Johnny Walker, man.
Johnny Walker's not that bad.
Getting subbed by him, though?
Fair enough. I'll go with you on the Aslan train. I mean, you're making sense to me.
It's not as wide as I thought. Aslan's a favorite, but he's only a minus 150. I was expecting longer, but
I'd put your money on Aslan here.
And then in light heavyweight, right there at the bottom of the light heavyweight rankings, but hey, Menefield is still 15 in light heavyweight, just kind of hanging on there. He's doing okay. He's getting Julius Walker, who's a debuting 6-0 fighter. That's going to be one of the talking points of so far of 2025 for these fight nights. Ranked guys fighting debuting fighters, like, but for seemingly no reason. The matchmaking's been really weird, right?
You know, they're trying to make someone, and the Walker brothers have delivered them for them so far. So they've reached out to the third Walker brother, Juicebox. And he's not actually a Walker brother because he's not from Brazil. He's from New Haven, Connecticut. But I mean, like, you know, the brand's the brand, so why not?
It's a real indictment of the light heavyweight division when debuting fighters are getting rank shots.
Yeah, the middle / bottom of the 15 in light heavyweight is pretty rough. I just love going on Tapology and reading the foundation styles of these guys. Julius Walker's his foundation style is ninja shit. So I don't know what to expect from this guy. He supposedly has an 81-inch reach, which is huge, at 6'4", so I don't know. Menefield, he's been very chinny recently. Carl Zoberg literally took his soul in 12 seconds. Nothing to laugh about. And then he went against Mirzakhanov and got his chin taken as well. If Julius Walker has the knockout ability, which it seems like he does, and especially in a ground-and-pound stance, I got to go with Julius Walker. I hate to say it because Menefield has UFC fights, but I'm going with the new guy.
The thing with Menefield is, like, he's got a lot of killing power himself. Like, he's gone out on a shield a whole bunch of times. I'll grant that. But, like, he's also beaten guys I think are pretty good, too, like Crute and Jacoby and Serkinov. So, I don't know. I don't hate Menefield here, but, like, I think you're right. I think his chin is starting to go. So, against Juicebox, I'll say Juicebox beats him up.
As a debuting fighter with not a lot of fights, he's not the kind of guy I would want to fight, I don't think. I don't think he's that inconsistent. I think Menefield's pretty dangerous. I'm going Menefield. Menefield is a favorite in this one. He's a minus 175 favorite. Okay, what else do we have here? So prelims, middleweight, Nursultan Ruzbayev versus Eric McConico. I don't know if I've been as high on Ruzbayev as Greg, who's unfortunately not here today. But he's now, 2-1 in the UFC, couple knockouts, lost to Buckley's, not a lot of shame. But I have to imagine he's probably a favorite here.
He's in that sweepstakes of, like, oh my God, he's from Dagestan, maybe he's the next guy. I don't think he is because he got knocked out by Buckley. But I mean, like, yeah, he's probably the favorite over Eric McConico.
He has 47 fights.
That's insane. What, really? He's a favorite here. He's a 3-1 favorite. Was there like a opponent change or something here? Nope. That's just looks like what it was always supposed to be. And in featherweights, the always game, Andre Fili versus Mezcal Acosta. That should be fun, I guess. Fili, I mean, it's hard to count on him, but you know, he beat Swanson last time. Like, he's always good for, like, a decent win over a tough guy.
He's 34. He's still got some time left.
Pick and fight in that one, which actually kind of speaks to Andre Fili's kind of up and downness. In welterweight, Adam Fugit versus Billy Goff. In bantamweight, Ricky Simone versus Javid Bashorat. Simone, he was like a locked in top 15 fighter for quite a while. 3 losses in a row. It's not looking good for him now.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I still think he can beat Javid Bashorat.
I don't even know anymore. I had so much faith in this guy. He was one of my favorites, but he's lost that explosiveness and that he used to have. And I don't know. I have a real trouble picking Ricky Simone now, and he's one of my favorites. Oh, yeah. Jeez, Bashorat's a 3-1 favorite. In middleweight, Mansur Abdul Malik versus Nick Klein. And in light heavyweight, Modestus Bukauskas versus Rafael Cerqueira. Okay, so Greg's not here to decide where's the best place to sit down and start watching this fight card to maximize time and enjoyment. Liam, do you want to make a pick here? What's the value of starting to watch this card?
The value is very top heavy. I think maybe at John Silva, just see if he can do some wild stuff, and then the main two are really good. So yeah, I think the top three is fair.
Greg calls Brennan Allen for sure.
Yeah, if Greg's here, he picks the top two. I agree.
I love John Silva though, and I like Rob Font if he's in the third slot too.
There's some good stuff here. It was supposed to be deeper. As we mentioned, it was supposed to be Dominic Cruz on this card, which would have been nice. Edson Barbosa versus Steve Garcia was supposed to be on this card.
Let's talk about some of the ones that did not happen. That's the fun of it. So Font Cruz, Cruz retired and is no longer in the fight. Edson Barbosa and Steve Garcia, that fight fell through.
That would have been awesome.
Curtis Blaydes, who is a top-ranked heavyweight, is supposed to be taking on Rizvav Kuniyev. Rizvan is making a debut, canceled, fell through.
No, they just moved it to the pay-per-view.
So they've canceled it off this card and moved it to pay-per-view. Welterweights, Adam Fugit versus Islam Dulatov was supposed to be here.
Fugit's still on the card. He just got a replacement.
Replacement. Mansur Abdul-Balik was originally supposed to be fighting Antonio Tricoli and got swapped over to Nick Klein. And then Catlin Vieira and Macy Chiasson was originally supposed to be on this card, and I believe Catlin got moved to a pay-per-view against someone else.
Chiasson got injured, and I mean, it's not like that would have been a good fight, because women's bantamweight fights are often pretty terrible, but at least it was like kind of rankings important, I guess. Yeah, I mean, it kind of fell off a bit. Hopefully these fights stay through, because I mean, at the least, you've got three or four pretty cool fights, and then there's always some good action potential for an Ian Cutelaba fight or an Alonzo Menafield fight, so it ain't that bad. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. There's not much news. We'll just talk about this GFL insanity, and then we'll recap the UFC fight night from last night, the Cannonier versus Rodriguez card.
Time that you've thrown to your Hey guys, I'm Henry Cejudo, and you guys are listening to The Hammer.
And we are back at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com. And that was Henry Cejudo, who's got his work cut out for him against Song Yadong. But if he can win, maybe he's back.
Yeah, main event of this weekend's UFC Fight Night, Cejudo versus Song in Seattle. So looks like a pretty good card.
Another guy who's back, Jared Cannoner versus RoboCop Rodriguez. So we just finished watching this fight night. There was originally some talk about it wasn't a very good fight card, but then it started gushing snow. And all of a sudden, when no one could go out, it was like, well, maybe we will watch this.
So last week, Greg was here. He did his Pearson's Point segment where we're like, okay, so where do you start watching this card? And he goes, none. And I was like, you know what? You sold me. I'm not going to watch this. And then this whole town got snowed in, and you guys went and abandoned me and watched it.
Well, I mean, like, I never said I was going to abandon the card. I was going to watch it anyway.
I said I was going to abandon an eyeline because I have nothing else to do.
I'm going to rely on you guys. I will say, though, for a card I did not care about and said I wasn't going to watch, I got all the picks right. I picked this card perfectly, but I didn't care. So that's how it works.
You did. So Gregory Rodriguez versus Jared Cannonier. This is, you know, Cannonier's old. He's 40. He shouldn't have much left, but he's still hanging on to that ranking spot. Rodriguez went out there to try to win this one and just gassed himself out in the first round. Just lost everything. So for the next three rounds, Cannonier walked after him and kept throwing gigantic hooks until he finally knocked him out.
Yeah, Gregory Rodriguez, if it was a one-round fight, won this fight. But unfortunately, it's not. It's a five-round fight. And exactly what I was saying last week, Gregory Rodriguez doesn't move his head enough. He needs to start getting his head movement, or guys like Jared Cannonier, any of these top middleweight guys, are going to knock him out. And Cannonier looked, his body is insane for a 41-year-old. Gregory Rodriguez looked really good too, but yeah, absolute war. Cannonier finished this one early in the fourth, and Gregory Rodriguez, just move just your head,
real
buddy.
Real angry dad energy from Cannonier.
Exactly what it was. Somebody stole the last beer out of the fridge.
Yeah, and he's not having it. He's like, someone took my go-gurt, and this man is going to pay.
Oh, no, no. If it's Jared Cannonier, someone stole his magic crystal.
Oh, yeah, possibly. He's a trippy boy like that.
But that was it. So I'm looking at it, like, so what do you do next with him? Because he won this fight. He's kind of been sliding, like, out of the title picture, but he might hold this number 7 ranking pretty strong. All these guys above him, like Strickland, and at these, you talked about this in the first half, Dave, the guys who are going to start sliding down the rankings, Strickland and Adesanya and Whitaker, he's already fought these guys. I don't need to see number 2 or whatever, or 3 or whatever it is against any of those guys, right? So, like,
I think you go to the division, you say, look, man, who wants to put their hand up? Like, Bo Nickel, Coppola, Pereira, do you want to put your hand up?
You could go that way. I also wouldn't mind the winner of Brendan Allen and Richard Hernandez. That's
what I was thinking.
Love it. To me, that's get a shot at Cannonier, because all the good guys above, all the guys on the way up above Cannonier look like they're set. Chimaev will get next. Imavov hopefully will fight Barallo. Cannonier, unfortunately, he's in the spot now where he's just going to have to defend this forever, because I do not see any fight above him that I want to see right now.
No, but I mean, at the same time, any fight, everyone below him should be putting their hand up, being like, I want next with Cannonier.
100%. I just think it's such a weird place for a guy to be in when you're like, okay, you've got this really high ranking spot. I don't think anyone wants to see him ever get a chance to go higher.
Yeah, he's a gatekeeper.
Sucks.
By the way, but... Calvin Kattar versus Yusuf Zalal. Calvin Kattar just doesn't have it anymore. Zalal couldn't get any takedowns to go in this fight, but he still just beat him up on the feet and outpointed him. So Zalal wins this one by decision.
Yeah, it was sad to see the fall off of Calvin Kattar like this. Like, we all expected it after watching him get absolutely destroyed by Holloway. But yeah, to have a guy like Yusuf Zalal piece you apart, it's not a good look.
Well, it's big for Zalal. Like what a great comeback story for Zalal to be gone from the UFC, come back and win like 4 in a row, just beat top 10 Calvin Kattar. Kattar's going to slide down, and you know, who knows? I don't know how far he can slide down. He beat Kika Chikatsius and Dan Ige, who are 12 and 14. But Zalal gets in there. This is great. I figured he'd be a top 10 guy, hopefully, this soon. And there's fresh matchups, all sorts of fresh matchups for the guy. I wouldn't mind seeing him fight out Aljamain Sterling.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Middleweights, Edmund Shabazian versus Dylan Budka. Shabazian just came out and whacked the dude, 7 punches in, finished it in a minute.
Big no kidding on that one.
Shabazz is a beast. And he's another guy in middleweight, by the way, who's looking for fights ahead of him. So we'll be seeing more of him, I think. Lightweights, Ismail Bonfim versus Nazim Sadikov. It was a night of mixed results for the Bonfim boys. Sadikov beat him up badly, and the doctor stopped it at the end of the first.
The question mark kick was amazing right near the end of the round.
He literally smashed
his face with a question mark kick. It was brilliantly done. I'm a big fan of Nazim Sadikov.
Yeah, I wasn't watching it, but I got a Sadikov text message from Liam, so I knew it was something cool.
Anytime you break a guy, every time you kick a dude in the face and break his orbital, it's impressive. More middleweights. Rodolfo Vieira versus Andre Petroski. Vieira, I think, looked really, really good in this one. I thought he won it, but unfortunately he did not win it. Petroski fought him off and got the nod from the judges here in a real close fight.
It was really close. It was kind of a clumsy fight. Like, these were two older guys just standing up when most of them want to be on the ground. And Petroski did get a little bit better of the feet exchanges.
Again, I haven't seen it. I can't comment, really. But MMA Decisions has 100% media scorecards, 29-28 for Petroski. Not saying it wasn't a close fight, but scorecard-wise, everybody went Petroski.
Featherweights, Jose Delgado versus Conor Matthews. Delgado kept the magic going and knocked him out in 3 minutes in the first round. Angela Hill versus Ketlin Souza. This is another gatekeeper who kept the gate. Angela Hill looked about as good as we've seen her. She actually had some takedowns in this one for once. So the gate is kept.
She's still ranked. What is she ranked at the moment? Because she's, what, 40 now?
13. Yeah.
Ranked number 13. I hate to say it. There's no one above her that she can beat. Most of them she's lost to. She's in a spot right now, too, where this is probably the best spot for her, is just gatekeep the top 15.
Well, the two below her are Pinero and Pennington. I think Pennington's starting to fall off too.
Big time.
She's another one where, like, anyone below her in strawweight should be putting their hand up right now.
Yep.
Flyweights, Rafael Estevan versus Jesus Aguilar. This one went decision. Estevan won it. Tons of takedowns. Not if you like grappling, this is a good fight. If you don't like grappling, you're not gonna like this fight. Welterweights, Gabriel Bonfim versus Chaos Williams. Bonfim got one back for the Bonfim brothers. Locked up a choke. I believe it was a guillotine choke.
Brabo choke, officially.
Brabo choke, I'm sorry. Chaos Williams, the ref, Herb Dean, was walking around being like, show me something, and just went completely out. Eyes rolled back up in his head. Looked disgusting. So Bonfim with a technical submission.
That was a rough moment for Paul Felder. Commentating, he's like, oh yeah, there's nothing here, I don't think Bonfim has anything, and then 2 seconds later Herb Dean pulls Bonfim off Williams and Williams is slapped.
What you call the reverse Rogan, where it's like he's got him, he does not have him.
Yeah, well, at the beginning Cormier was like, oh, that's tight, and then it wasn't tight, and then Bonfim ended up getting it, and then Felder's like, oh yeah, this round's good, we're good, and then it's like, oh, Chaos Williams is no idea where he is.
Well, for the record, that submission happened at 4 minutes and 58 seconds.
Wow.
It was beautiful. Like, it was a weird one where the camera guy could not get a good angle of it. It was like they were pretzeled together. It was very interesting.
You know what, Williams, like no shame in there, really. He took the fight on short notice, I think. He'd won two before that. I know he's kind of like a one-dimensional power hitter or whatever like that, but I guess there's no surprise he lost to that. But he took it on short notice against a guy who's good at subs.
Got to stop doing that, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you're intelligent.
That's a really good point. You're on two straight right now. I'll
take it.
Like, where's your manager saying, like, Chaos, come on, man. You don't need to fight a Bonfim on a week's notice when he can wrestle and you can't.
True.
Bantamweights, Vince Morales versus Elijah Smith. Elijah Smith outpointed this one. It was a close fight.
Morales is a tough guy. That's a nice win.
Yeah. And then heavyweights, Dante Mays versus Walter Walker. Dante Mays made his debut in the rankings, the heavyweight rankings, this week because,
by attrition,
everyone above him got fired. And I called it last week. I'm like, I don't know, man. Walter Walker's pretty good. And Walter Walker walked over, threw him on the ground, and heel hooked him. So that's two back-to-back heel hooks for Walter Walker. I believe he's the first guy to win two times back-to-back heel hooks since Paul Harris. So the Walker boys, they are winning brothers. And Dontell Mays, You had 1 week in the rankings, brother. I'm sorry. You're gone now. I believe Walter Walker is going to take your spot. And you know who else made the rankings with attrition?
Yes, I do. My baby boy, Kennedy Inchekwu. Give me my 14 cents on that NFT game, baby.
Oh, he's a ranked heavyweight now.
Like heavyweight Kennedy Inchekwu. He's won a fight in heavyweight.
Wait, which heavyweight fight did he win? Was it like Gilvin St. Preux or something? Who did he beat?
Oh, he beat Lucas Brevski and Huggy Bear.
Right. That is it. That is insanity. Heavyweight has never been worse, right?
Never.
Well, when the fight over Huggy Bear gets you your 15 hole, it's 14 hole, actually.
Yeah, 14 hole, yeah, above Dontel Mays, yeah.
So, I mean, like, he bumped Dontel Mays, and then Walter Walker's going to bump Dontel Mays. So that means that we're not going to be able to call Dontel Mays as our prospect of the year this year, because Steve's going to be like, oh, well, he was ranked for, like, 10 seconds.
He was.
I would never call him.
This is so bad. Okay. I saw somebody post this. I can't take credit for this, but they posted like the top 10 boxing heavyweights or something like that. And it's like, I know boxing's different. They don't always fight ranked fighters, but even your top 10 ranked heavyweight boxer is like 43-1 or something, right? Top 10 ranked heavyweight Tai Tuivasa is like on a 5-fight losing streak, and everyone below him is just guys who you never consider to be ranked. Gaziev, Cortez Acosta, Mick Parkin, and Chekwu, Dontel Mays. They need new blood so bad. Heavyweight's always been like a top-heavy division. It's never been this crap.
Walter Walker's going to be there.
It's the worst that we've ever seen it. Walter Walker's a really small heavyweight, and he's only won twice in the UFC, and he's earned a 14-hole, and he deserves it.
He might be less embarrassing than some of these other ones, though. Like, and then you got the guy who's fighting Curtis Blaydes in a few weeks or whatever like that. I mean, I was going to say he's going to be Curtis Blaydes, but maybe there's something here. They're giving some unranked guys some big opportunities, like shake things up, but it doesn't look good.
Heavyweight's in a position now where if you win any fight, you get a ranking spot. Crazy. Doesn't matter. You can be Huggy Bear and you can be 14.
You literally have to beat Lucas Brezky to get ranked. That's what the last three guys have done.
Yeah, and then like you look at the guy in the 13th hole, Mick Parkin.
He's got some potential, I guess, no? But I mean, he shouldn't be a ranked heavyweight.
I mean, look, like I get it. He's at the cap for the weight division. So I mean, like, good for him. But I mean, like, I don't think anyone's excited about Mick Parkin. Let's put it like that. And that got him the ranking spot is Lucas Brezhki.
I guess it's technically because he's won like three or four fights. Like I think it's more of a total amount of wins than specifically Lucas Brezhki. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Mick Parkin's what, 4-0? Yeah. So there's worse choices to rank.
Women's bantamweights, Jacqueline Cavalcanti defeated Julia Avila. Just, again, a pointer, not a wonderful fight. Avila is, I don't know how much leather is left for her to do, to be honest with you.
Probably number 12, 50-50 fighter there. No great, yeah. Is it a heaviness problem? I don't want to say 135-pound women heavy, but like the heaviest current men's division is the worst, and the heaviest women's division, women's bantamweight, is the worst. There is a serious depth of talent.
For heavyweights, we've said for years, if you are 6'4" and athletic and you can run and jump and do all the moves, why would you come to UFC when you could go to the NFL? That's the reality. If you're on the practice squad in the NFL, if you're on the warm-up team in you know, the NHL, you're going to be making more money than you're going to be making in the UFC. It's just the reality of it. And the same thing with 135-pound women. It used to be it was a pretty good division because
there's no flyweight.
Ronda Rousey got paid.
Well, and there's no flyweight. So yeah. if you couldn't make strawweight, you had to go to bantamweight.
Yeah, but like with Ronda Rousey getting paid, all of a sudden you had all these people wanting to jump in the division. But now that Ronda Rousey's not there, the money's not there, and all of a sudden it's like, well, would I rather do this or would I go play like soccer?
I do think that the problem in women's bantamweight, I'm sure it is some of that, like, you know, athletic, strong women in that. But yeah, really, like, flyweight has like 15 good ranked fighters. If there wasn't flyweight, bantamweight would have 7 or 8 of them. It's more of a case of women's flyweight stealing bantamweight's lunch. But the heavyweight division is just so much worse. It used to feel like heavyweights used to get paid more too. It's because you had like either Pride or Strikeforce or sort of Bellator. would throw money at name heavyweights in that, and because they were the flagship, that, you know, it's the big guys, the most dangerous guys in the world. Like, there used to be money in being a heavyweight, but now you're coming in on the contender series for 10,000 and 10,000. Who would do that?
Yeah, and the other thing is, like, the heavyweights, like, a lot of the legend names are heavyweights, like Couture, Frank Mir, Arlovsky. Like, some of these guys were fighting in the division recently. Like, Arlovsky was fighting in the division, like, a year ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're looking at these legendary guys, and then you're trying to compare that. And, like, right now, the most legendary guy in the division, other than Jones, is Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis should be getting paid what Arlovsky was getting paid, or what Randy Couture was getting paid. I mean, probably is, I would hope, because 24 years of the evolution of the sport. But, I mean, like, I'm sorry, like, who is going crazy to see Shamil Gaziev?
Okay,
there's one who's a draw in the division, other than arguably Jones, hopefully with Tom Aspinall. But, like, other than those two guys, the only guy in the division who's a draw is Francis Ngannou, who is not in the division and is going to be fighting Deontay Wilder in, like, a boxing match.
I don't even care about the draw factor of it. I just want to see some heavyweights that are worth watching. It used to be like, oh, you can match up any two heavyweights and there's, you know, some intrigue or whatever there. There's only like three or four heavyweights that are even worth watching right now.
And it's certainly not worth paying. Speaking of legendary matches.
Speaking of legendary heavyweights, my God. Okay, so, I mean, we've been talking about GFL for a little bit here. This new promotion, and they did the big draft that was like a big cluster, and they still don't have any cards booked or anything, but they're doing the season team-based thing where Dubai has a team and Sao Paulo has a team and New York has a team and all that, and they did a draft and they got their teams. Each team has like dozens and dozens of fighters in all the different weight classes, but it's hard to even say if these are like officially booked fights, but these are the fights that they've said are signed and that they're going to put on a card to be determined when the season starts. And they're insane. You can't expect any different because a lot of the names, especially in the heavier weight classes here, are old fighters. But oh my God, a heavyweight fight of Fabricio Werdum versus Frank Mir is insanity in 2015. Sorry, it is insanity in 2025.
It would have been insanity in 2015 too, but I mean, like,
that would have been a fine fight in 2015. an older but fine fight in 2015.
So it's two guys in every division. The guy for Team Sao Paulo is Fabricio Werdum. The guy for Los Angeles is Frank Mir, and those are the two guys that they've set up. So I don't know. I'm pretty okay with that.
I am not okay with that. Do you remember during the antitrust thing when everyone had to write all the fighters were writing those notes saying why they needed the money immediately and why they would take a smaller payout to get the money sooner because they needed it so bad? Fabricio Verdum's like, my quality of life is shot. Everything, the CTE and the bodily injuries, like, sounded like a man desperately needing money because he is not in the condition to fight. And now we got to watch him fight Frank Mir?
Yeah, fair enough.
It's bad. These guys are too old.
Look at the other fights that have been announced.
Weidman Rockhold 2, 10 years later.
You all
That's
remember
not as bad. Kendrua? That's bad. That's, well, that one's really... Okay, let's do one at a time. Weidman Rockhold's bad. Like, that's pretty bad. But it's not as bad as... Like Weidman was in the UFC, what, like 3 weeks ago?
Well, what, like, I don't get, though, is like, okay, so... Weidman's not as bad. Rockwell's not as bad. Like,
it's bad.
Not good. It's not good.
Frank Mir never fought Fabricio Werdum. I would have sworn those guys fought in the early days of the Strikeforce acquisition, but no, it's actually a fresh matchup.
They're legitimately arguably the two best jiu-jitsu guys in the history of the heavyweight division, and it's the first time they're going to fight because Frank Mir was in around the time that Brock was in. But left because, you know,
Frank Mir is there fighting all those Strikeforce imports. He was there. The timing was right. It just didn't happen, right? What's the other matchup you saw, Liam?
There's also Yoel Romero versus Shogun Hua.
Jesus Christ, I hate that fight.
That could arguably be the worst fight of all time.
It could be really bad. I mean, not that those guys haven't had cool fights in the past, but Yoel Romero has had a good fight in 5 years. Shogun's looked slow and shot for 5 years minimum. And I don't know if Shogun should be taking shots. It's two things. One, I don't know if Shogun should be taking punches from Yoel Romero like that. But on the other hand, I don't know if Yoel Romero's going to throw any. So
this is a nightmare waiting to happen, this whole GFL thing. Like, some of the teams are like, they're literally all the teams are just old people. And it's really scary.
Let's say Yoel Romero falls out, right? Because he's old and he's 1,000 years old. Who do you think his other middleweight representative of Team Miami is?
Wait, this is a middleweight fight?
Yeah.
Shogun's going to make middleweight now?
I just looked it up, but I'm not going to ruin it.
Loyola and Hector Lombard are the two listed middleweights for Team Miami.
Oh, makes sense.
And Shogun is a listed light heavyweight for Team Sao Paulo. The middleweights there are Alan Patrick and Diego Lima, but they're not in these fights, so I don't know. And then, like, Shogun is 43. Granted, I love the guy, but he's 43. Romero is 47. And Hector Lombard is 47 as well. So the combined age of this fight is 90 years old.
That should be illegal.
No matter who goes, it's going to be 90 years old.
This says Romero versus Shogun's light heavyweight.
I would hope so, but I mean, like, he's listed as a middleweight, according to GFL.
They don't even know what they're doing.
I'm looking at the team roster. He's on the middleweight roster. And I know that he's fought light heavyweight before. I know that Shogun is a light heavyweight, but, like, Yoel Romero's listed as a middleweight.
Yep.
Like, Lyoto Machida's the manager of Sao Paulo, and then Shogun's fighting. Like, that should not be a thing.
These are bad. And, I mean, we talked about this before. We know what, I mean, if there's ever a card at all, we know what they're doing. Like, you want to get investors, you use names that people know. And it's not like there's, like, a lot of current stars, and the few that there are locked up by the UFC. So go for names. We kind of learned that you can draw with elderly people, names more than top of your ability. Mike Tyson was in a big fight recently. Jake Paul fighting all these 40-year-old guys and getting some hype off of it. Names are more important. Bellator had their most thriving period when they were using guys who should not be fighting anymore or at the very, very end of their careers. I guess if you want to get investors, you're better off using these names as opposed to young, good, fresh fighters. But these fights are bad. And like we talk about like how depressing it is to watch some of these guys take all this damage and these older guys. We know for a fact how bad some of these guys are doing right now because they put them because they wrote statements about how ruined their lives are physically recently for the antitrust suit.
And the other one that they announced for this was Uriah Hall versus Douglas Lima, I think.
That's not bad. Like, it's not good, but that's kind of almost like a regular fight. No, it's not as embarrassing as the rest.
No, it's not as bad.
I mean, Douglas Lima's good, but it's, I mean, like, Uriah Hall has no business fighting him.
Yeah, I don't get it. And I'm just going to go out here. Boxing match announced April 12th, 2025 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Rampage Jackson versus Rashad Evans.
Well, actually, that's funny you mentioned that because that's why Rashad Evans, he was on this roster on one of the teams, Miami team, I think. And they announced him for a fight. And he was like, wait a minute, I'm booked. Like, I'm fighting Rampage in this boxing match coming up. I can't do this. And they were like, we screwed up. And then they just took him off the roster. The fact that they drafted Rashad, got him set up onto a team, got him set up for a fight when he never agreed to it and didn't want to do it in the first place, also very big problem with this promotion. So maybe none of these fights happen. So what's the deal with this boxing fight?
Thunder. I don't even know what company this is. I don't even know. It's called ICS Mania 1 Boxing Showdown.
There's money in the old names, I guess, or somebody sees potential dollar signs in that. That pay-per-view was huge. That was huge. That was a non-title fight in the UFC that did over 1 million buys.
It was. But without looking, when did that fight happen?
2010?
May 29th, 2010.
Yeah, I know that because I was on the way to India.
This will be the 15-year anniversary of that fight that they're doing the rematch. When you start your promotion, your new promotion that's a reset from PFL and Bellator, with like...
It doesn't have any real connection other than one guy used to be involved in PFL Canada. Like, it's not like it's any...
Yeah, but like, it's you know, it's supposed to be this new company with like... All these awesome things going on, or whatever it is, but you started off with a scammy draft that instantly gets mocked, and you're booking like I'm seeing articles of people being like, there's over 90 years of experience in this fight. That's not good when we're talking about sports, man. Like, what are we doing here? Like, these guys should you would be better. And I swear to God, this is true. You would be better to cancel all of these fights and put these guys on reality TV shows.
No, I disagree.
Like the Real Fighter Housewives.
I disagree. They have a plan. I'm not saying the plan works, but would we be talking about this far in advance without even a card if these weren't the names involved? This is how they're looking to...
About this card is not a good thing.
No, this is how they're looking to get investors. Just like PFL and just like that, it's like, okay, well, if you've got money to hold a burn and you want to get into the MMA business, it's going to be Rashad Evans and Shogun Hua and all that stuff, as opposed to no names and Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold and stuff. This is their attract screen. Bad though.
I would hope so, but I'm telling you, there is not going to be any money in putting these fights on. It just isn't going to be. It didn't work for Bellator. It didn't work for PFL. It's not going to work for GFL either. The idea of the Legends matches being a draw and being profitable, it's working for one guy, and his last name is Paul, and he's a YouTuber who brings in his own audience no matter who he fights. So, I mean, like, you know, that one guy, yeah, he's choosing to fight 40-year-old guys, but it doesn't mean that the 40-year-old guy is a draw. It means he's a draw.
I'm not saying it's good or cool, but Masvidal and Diaz sold out that arena. These matches shouldn't happen, but this isn't the worst way to get attention. It's the worst, like, morally, but it's not the worst from a business side, I don't think. Liam, just before we go, a couple weeks back, me, Greg, and Dave, we all picked which GFL team is our guys. Which one's our team? Which one stands out to you, if any?
Oh, God. Give me L.A.
Who's on L.A. again?
Mir Arlovsky, Grant Neal, Uriah Hall, Lorenz Larkin, Sage Northcutt, Tony Ferguson, Chad Mendez, Uriah Faber, Josh Hill. I think the women are better.
You're picking that team just because of the youngest, and you think the other guys are too old.
I Arlovsky. But I like the woman in this one. I like Leslie Smith. Aspen Ladd kind of stinks, but like Cynthia Calvillo, Ilomale McFarland, and then I got to pick them because my 2021 Prospect of the Year, Corey McKenna, is on the atomweight team.
That is not the worst roster of women's fighters outside of the UFC. Farland? Calvillo is like a right number 15-ish person. Sure, that's your team. If this season ever starts going, then we'll know who to buy jerseys of.
I'm buying a Team LA Josh Hill jersey.
All right, thank you for listening to us. You've been listening to us at 93.3 CFMU. You can also find us at thehammermma.com.
You can find me on Twitter at Steve Jeffrey. If you go to thehammermma.com, there are links to stream and subscribe to our show and a bunch of places, including mmapodcast.com, the iTunes Store, Player FM, Spotify, you name it. Liam, where can we find you?
You can find me never leaving my house again if the snow keeps up.
All right, have a good week.
Bringing you the best of 4/4 electronica and everything in between. Produced and hosted by Ree.